So hello, everyone. My name is Brian Matthew. I'm a program manager in the storage and file systems team, and I welcome you to today's talk on the storage capabilities that we'll be introducing with Windows Server 2012. A brief introduction to our team. So we build the platform storage features which ship across all versions and SKUs of Windows, from the server to the client, and even on WinRT platforms. So we service and we develop products for them all. But in this talk, we're going to be talking specifically on more server-focused features. In this release, we have focused on three key tenets. Firstly, many of you have invested heavily in existing storage infrastructure, and we're cognizant to that. And that's why we'll be delivering capability that will maximize their value when used with Windows. But alternatively, we also want to give you the option to build a cost-efficient storage solution that is resilient, scalable, available, and which delivers high performance for the appropriate set of workloads. And number three, we are opening up a new opportunity for our partners to build flexible and scalable low-cost appliances which are easy to manage. But if I have to leave you folks with something today, it's that you get more value out of Server 2012 than any other platform. Windows just gives you more. Okay, next. Having a look at our high-level view of our storage platform, we're delivering a robust set of features and capabilities which are manifested in features. Getting more out of your existing storage investments through fast, secure data movement and efficient capacity utilization. Minimalizing your capital expenditure, we give you the option to deploy storage spaces, the new low-cost storage platform I talked about. Maximizing data set availability through a modernized and rethunk check disk. And making life easier for you and minimalizing your operational expenditure through an intuitive and integrated storage management experience. Windows has two basic mechanisms for data access, block and file. Block, you have application servers directly connected to your storage, or file access through a continuously available file server. And by the way, this CA aspect is new in Server 2012, and I'm sure you've heard about it in many other talks and perhaps on the floor. And we support traditional storage deployments with storage arrays, and Windows Server 2012 works in harmony with your storage arrays to deliver even more powerful storage platform out of the advanced capabilities that are present in these investments. But new in this release is the option to deploy a low-cost storage platform utilizing cost-efficient hardware that integrates into your data center just as easily as it would a traditional storage deployment. Walking out of this talk, you'll learn of the fresh arsenal of capabilities that Server 2012 makes available to you, and once you experience it, you'll see that Windows gives you more than any other platform. Let's jump right in. With talking about your existing storage array deployments. So Server 2012 works in conjunction with those advanced capabilities that I mentioned that many of your arrays actually have, which deliver you better value. The first of which capability is called thin provisioning, which is a capability that lets you provision storage ahead of time, even though you don't have that much storage in the first place. And then you can simply add more storage later as you need it. I'm sure many of you deploy it today. However, there's always existed an inherent disconnect between the view of the storage from the file system and a view of the storage from the array. We're unifying this view. When a file or a region of a file, even from within a VM, is deallocated from the file system, in other words, it's deleted, this information is fully plumbed throughout our stack all the way down to the array. And this helps minimize your storage footprint, which frees up valuable storage resources for other business needs. Also, this unified view lets us provide standardized notifications despite heterogeneous storage deployments. So when your capacity thresholds have been reached or are approaching your capacity thresholds, this gives you a notification so you can rapidly make corrective action. To identify thinly provisioned LUNs, we've worked very closely with the industry to follow standard identification specs. And optimization, notification, identification works automatically regardless if you're using our new storage platform with storage spaces or any number of existing storage arrays. So walking through how optimization works, you have a VM at the top, or it could be a physical machine, it doesn't really matter, or it could be accessed through file, through a CA file server. A file deletion comes through that top level, goes through the stack, goes through the physical machine hosting the file system, goes down to the file system. The file system then obviously maps which blocks that file is supposed to be located in. Then it sends a trim or unmap command, depending on the interface, down to the physical storage. And that storage can then deallocate the blocks as necessary, which frees up the pool capacity at the bottom. I'm going to walk through this in a demo, but let's first talk about the other capability. The second of which capability is a mechanism called offloaded data transfers, or ODX for short. And I'm sure many of you saw the ODX demo in the keynote and were quite impressed. And there's many other vendors on the floor which have also shown ODX demos. We have worked very closely with storage vendors and the standards body to develop an industry-leading capability to efficiently move data securely across machine boundaries and potentially even geo-boundaries. But this ability to securely and efficiently move data across those boundaries have never really existed in the past. So this is a completely new thing that we're doing in Windows. And we've plumbed this capability throughout the stack, so you don't need to make a concerted effort to take advantage of it. And let me show you how this is done. But first, a little background. So data movement today. You're moving data between two application servers running some app. You have two virtual disks, and you have some storage array. Traditional data movement, you would simply read the data out of the first VD, go up to the first application server, you know, in a buffer. That application server would then send the data across your network transport onto the other machine, which then consumes the buffer and writes it out to the other virtual disk. It's simple. It works great. But there seems to be some inefficiency here. So you're taking data out of storage, moving it up across to your application layer, moving it across your network transport, and back down into the same storage. It seems like that top-level movement is not really necessary, especially since the array has so much capability to move data around. And the array moves data around all the time. So why not pass this job down to them? So that's exactly what we're doing. So with this method, we try to preserve the philosophy of reads and writes, familiar to applications today. But we abstract the data that's intended to be transferred with what's called a token. And this is a lightweight entity, which represents a point-in-time view of the data. You can sort of think of this token as a super, super compressed view of the data. When transferring data across machine boundaries between applications, the same read-style operation happens to the virtual disk, but instead of filling a buffer with the data, you're just returning a lightweight token that the array generates. And you transfer this token across your applications through your transport. It's lightweight, so there's minimal impact, and out to the destination virtual disk. The array identifies the token and independently performs the data transfer. So before, the actual data transfer happens in a network pipe. After, data transfer is offloaded down into the array itself. Now this works now this method saves the CPU utilization on your two application servers, saves memory bandwidth, and perhaps most importantly, the network transport that you previously used to transfer data is no longer saturated. So you can use it to actually do work. You know, I mean, your switches will thank you. And the speed of the data transfer is no longer limited by that network pipe that you used to connect those two servers. So if you're only deploying 1 gig, your transfer could potentially go significantly faster than that because it goes at the speed your storage array can perform the transfer at. So as I said, ODX is plumbed throughout the stack and down all the way to the core copy engine, which is used by most applications. So this enables transparent utilization when a supported storage array is attached to your system. So existing scripts, applications, copy utilities, robocopy, and even Explore drag and drop just work because of this copy engine integration. ODX is great for scenarios when you need to replicate data multiple times, such as VM provisioning. You take an image, you replicate it 10 times, and you don't impact the application servers or your network infrastructure. Similarly, with data mining and storage migration. So ODX is a really, really powerful new tool for Windows. Back home in Redmond, we have a storage array. We have several storage arrays, but just one's being used in this example. And we have two file servers connected to that array, and those file servers see each a virtual disk, and which is shared out through the file server. So I have two shares, two file servers, two virtual disks, one storage array. If I were to transfer data between one file server to the other from SMB shares mapped to my laptop over here, the data would have to travel all the way across the US and back again. I mean, this is a significant amount of data that's being transferred. It's not going to be very fast. And I mean, it's going to be limited by the slow internet that we're getting here. With offloaded data transfers, what happens is the lightweight token gets transmitted across the US and then back again, which then causes the data transfer to happen at the array level. And this is a significant savings. And makes your data transfer significantly faster. So let's do a short demo on how this actually works. But I'm going to combine thin provisioning and offloaded data transfers to it. So I have two shares. One is ODX1, one is ODX2. And one is connected to one file server, one's connected to the other file server. So I'm going to copy a file between the shares. And I'm going to open up Task Manager while this is happening. So this is actually an older array that we're using because it's the only one that was available. But you can see the transfer is happening fairly quickly considering it's going across the US. But there's barely any impact to the Ethernet here. There's no additional memory being used. And the CPU impact, well, I have Hyper-V running in the background, so CPU impact is only my hypervisor. But you can see the data transfer happens very quickly considering I'm only connected through WAN. So let's wait for that to finish. Should just take a moment. And it's done. So data transfer across the US, efficiently done without impacting your network, without impacting servers, without impacting memory. Now let's look at thin provisioning. So let's look at the pool capacity being used by my storage array. This basically goes down to the storage array and sees how much available capacity there is for provisioning my storage. And this is connected to the destination LUN. So let's wait a moment while it detects that. OK, so there's 408 gigabytes of available space. Now, let's go and delete this file that we just copied. It'll take a moment to do the trimmer operation. So let's wait a few seconds before we do the show pool again. So right now, what the storage array is doing, NTFS deleted the file. So sent the trim all the way down to the storage array, which is really the unmap operation. So the storage array right now is freeing the blocks that back that VHD file. So hopefully, if I do the show pool again, it will show me that I have some capacity back available for other use. It does take a few moments for it to refresh, so I do hope it refreshes in time. Oh, let's try it again. Is it done yet? As you can see, the pool capacity has now refreshed to show that I have 415 gigabytes of available space, which is exactly the amount the VHD file was. So thin provisioning really helps you efficiently utilize your capacity when you delete files. And this can even happen within a VHD. Let's go back to my presentation here. So here's a subset of the partners that have indicated a plan of record to support thin provisioning and offloader data transfers for Server 2012. And of course, we are working with many other partners. And be sure to look out for announcements from those vendors when support is publicly announced. So either through optimized space utilization, threshold notifications, or efficient data movement, Server 2012 gives you more value out of your existing storage arrays. Going back to our platform storage benefits, we are minimalizing capital expenditure through providing the option to deploy low-cost storage platforms that is easy, that is resilient, scalable, and easy to manage. And this feature that satisfies these sets of capabilities is called Storage Spaces. With this new storage platform, we have introduced new abstractions, the first of which is called a storage pool, which is a means of aggregating a collection of physical disks to provide isolation and to simplify management. From this pool of disks, you can carve out some capacity with a desired level of resiliency, and this abstraction is called a storage space. So a storage pool, you gather your physical disks. Physical disks could be from one of these arrays or could from one of these JBODs or could be from directly attached storage. From the storage pool, carve out a storage space with some resiliency characteristic or some capacity characteristic. But as Windows needs to scale from, well, my laptop here, up to the needs of the large data center, we support a range of industry standard interconnects, SATA, USB, SAS, and shared SAS. But with shared SAS, what you can do is you can further utilize the wide gamut of cost-efficient storage enclosures available for many of our partners today. And many of these products you can touch and feel at the Partner Pavilion. There are two vendors with us, and I will describe. And one of them is DataOn, and one of them is RAID Incorporated. You'll see them in the Partner Pavilion. They have this is the area of the blue carpet. But storage spaces with the flexibility of commodity storage of different configurations enables a very simple deployment model where you create virtual disks, or in other words, spaces, with different capabilities depending on your workload or business needs. These virtual disks are an integrated part of Windows, even though they're just virtual objects. And as such, all Windows capabilities can run on top of them, such as Hyper-V, failover clustering, and so on and so forth, and many of your applications. They're just disks. You create a storage space, they pop up in Windows as a disk. And you can deploy these virtual disks for either physical or virtualized deployments, and even through a file server for remote workloads or for client access. It's very flexible, but it's cost effective. Many of Storage Space's capabilities are what you would expect from a business critical storage solution. Most basically, Storage Spaces provides resiliency to physical media failure through mirrored and parity spaces, supporting two-way or three-way mirrors. Storage Spaces also supports thinly provisioned spaces, where allocation happens in an on-demand manner, and as your storage needs start to exceed your available pool capacity, you can easily add additional storage. And Storage Spaces can utilize that additional capacity as needed. But uniquely, Storage Spaces has an innovative capability where we expose a set of APIs for applications that have for classes of applications that have an innate knowledge of the integrity of their own data. So these applications are able to query spaces for all of the available copies. So remember I mentioned spaces as mirroring. You can look at each copy. Those apps can look at each copy and inspect them for corruptions and notify spaces which copy is corrupted so that spaces can autocorrect. So it's very flexible for these sets of applications, and this capability has not existed before in Windows. For deployments that just can't go offline or for deployments of scale, Spaces integrates with CSV and failover clustering. I'm going to talk about this in the next couple of slides. A consistent management experience is provided through storage management APIs, and storage spaces can be easily administered through PowerShell, and it's fully integrated in the Server Manager. We also have powerful controls to manage the provisioning of your space based on your workload needs. So, for instance, in a VDI deployment, you can ask spaces to provision a space on a set of SSDs for your high IOP golden images. And you can also ask Spaces to provision a space on a set of 10K or 15K RPMs for your lower IOPs but higher capacity user data or differencing images. While the provisioning happens typically in an automatic manner, we provide the ability to control the placement if you really need it. So this is a very simplified storage spaces deployment, and this is what we expect most of our customers to deploy, this is what we expect many customers to deploy today, where you have a single server directly attached to storage, and you have provisioned virtual disks, and you have workload running on top of it. It's very simple, and as your workload needs increase, you simply just add more servers and put your workload on those new servers. But for deployments that need high availability, and of course for deployments of even more scale, integration with failover clustering is really needed. So you can take a collection of servers, typically 2 to 4, some shared SAS storage, and form a cluster. And this basic building block, this basic building block here is called a deployment element. You have your servers, you have your storage. Within the deployment element, each server can see the same storage. So in the event of one of the servers were to go down, the storage ownership automatically fails over, and another server takes over, ensuring your data continues to be available. Cluster shared volumes provides a unified namespace for your workloads. So even though you potentially have multiple servers and multiple spaces, there's just one namespace to talk to that all your workload runs on top of. And this makes management a lot easier. Furthermore, many of the workloads that run in a cluster can be moved off a node without disruption, such as live migration of virtual machines. So if you had to take a server down for maintenance, move off the workload, take the server down, storage fails over, do whatever you need to do, take the server back online, and you're good to go. Or if you're using SCVMM, that makes the process automated. And storage spaces is designed to grow as necessary to satisfy your data center needs, up to 16 deployment elements with 4 nodes each. And we're still using the same namespace with CSV. So it's very easy to manage, even though you're scaling outwards. Going a step further, by using cost-efficient hardware available from many of our partners, you can build deployments of low cost that scale to an incredible amount of capacity. In this example, we have a deployment element with 4 servers and 4 60-bay JBOD arrays, with each server having redundant paths to the array. This is 720 terabytes of capacity in half rack a gear. And you can scale this out to 16 deployment elements, which gets you 11.5 petabytes of storage, which is more than enough to store all the American academic research libraries many times over. And all of this is available for a fraction of a cost that you would traditionally have to pay for your storage. So here we have an example of a performance gear deployment element. We have 3 servers provided by RAID Incorporated, all with dual SAS adapters, all connected to a RAID Inc. 24-bay JBOD with 24 SSDs. And with this, I'm going to show you how many IOPS we can get. We were running the test live earlier. It takes a few moments to run the test, so I'll just show you the result. And you can actually go to their booth to get them to run the test live for you. And you can see that we get consistent numbers here. So we're getting 4K random reads on 3 cluster nodes with 24 SSDs using simple storage spaces, 1.43 million IOPS aggregate, with each node just doing shy of 500,000 IOPS. That's a pretty impressive number of transactions in the cluster. And this IOP number is not pegging the CPU. The CPUs are about 50%. So you have a lot of room to grow. And with a sequential read test, you're doing 1 megabyte sequential reads with the 3 nodes, you're getting 11 gigabytes a second of throughput from each node. That's pretty incredible. Now, you can see this hardware and others at booth number 23, RAID Incorporated, in the Partner Pavilion. Again, the blue carpet area. And they'll be more than happy to show you the hardware and let you touch and feel it. Just try not to pull any drives, please. We encourage you to explore the option of deploying storage spaces with Server 2012. You'll see, once you deploy it, how it'll deliver you cost-efficient storage for the appropriate set of workloads. So we enable you to deploy all this capacity, but how are we keeping your data set online? Here's where a modernization to the NTFS health model and check this come into play. NTFS has always supported volumes of 256 terabytes in size. However, no one really deploys that. There exist practical limitations due to potential volume unavailability with long-running check disk. Now, check disk is necessary with NTFS because sometimes you have corruptions, and it needs to ensure that NTFS metadata is consistent. So we don't want a corrupted file system, but you do need to run check disk. While check disk runtimes have decreased in every release since 2000, many IT administrators choose not to deploy volumes greater than just 500 gigs. They just couldn't put all their eggs in one basket. So with Server 2012, we made it a priority to rethink availability. And here's how we're doing it. First and foremost, we've improved the detection and handling of corruptions within NTFS. So when NTFS detects a corruption and it's running on the fly, it'll attempt to self-heal it. We've improved this mechanism significantly that it'll cover a lot of cases of common corruptions. So you don't need to take your volume offline from these cases. But we've also changed the fundamental check disk execution model. Whereas before, check disk was a completely offline operation, we've now split it up into two parts. Let me walk through the two parts. When NTFS detects a corruption, it'll attempt to analyze the corruption and try to repair itself, which happens while the volume is live. But if the problem wasn't fixed, what it does is it logs that corruption for later processing in a file. Now, this analysis step was never an online operation. Now it is. When it is convenient for the user or administrator to take the volume offline, he does so. The volume goes offline. The corruptions are rapidly corrected. Remember, we had that file, so we know exactly what to do. And the volume is brought back online again. And this happens very quickly. But going even further, if you're deploying volumes in a cluster with CSV, instead what happens is that the IOs are transparently paused. For a short period of time, the volume's taken offline in the background, it's rapidly corrected, volume's brought back online, and the IOs are resumed. From an application point of view, your volume never went offline. So you have high availability, true high availability with CSV. Server 2012, 300 million files. The time for check disk, Server 2008 R2 with 300 million files, the time required for a check disk to run and fix a single corruption was just over 6 hours. That's 6 hours of unavailability. That means perhaps you had to stay up to midnight to take your stuff offline to run check disk and come back in the morning to bring it back online. With Server 2012, mere seconds. In this case, less than a second, just to fix a single corruption. Once you experience the new check disk and how we've rethought availability in Server 2012, you'll have the confidence to deploy those multi-terabyte volumes that I'm sure many of you have always wanted to deploy. So capacity. Many of you just want to know how you can more efficiently store data in the space that you already have. Let's talk about data deduplication. A lot of your data shares similar content, or exhibits patterns of repetition, or similar content between files, et cetera, and so forth. Data deduplication takes advantage of these properties and finds and removes duplication without compromising that data's fidelity or integrity. So if I have, for instance, common blocks, that is, blocks shared between files, data duplication will actually make multiple copies of those blocks to ensure that you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. You can deploy dedupe on NTFS volumes within a cluster, which provides users or workloads access to data either through block or file, such as these funny-looking characters here. And it's easy to manage dedupe through PowerShell and fully integrated in a server manager. So your typical savings is going to be greatest with a VHD library. That's simply due to the fact that most VHDs, or at least in a VHD share, share most of the same content. But many other types of data also get great savings too. We actually have a tool you can run in your current environment, as long as it's running at least Servo 8R2, to evaluate the dedupe savings you might hope to achieve. Now let me show you dedupe. So I have a virtual machine here running on my laptop connected to a USB drive, and I just mounted a second VHD with a bunch of pre-deduped data. And in the Server Manager UI, you just go to Volumes, and you see that you have an integration with dedupe here. So I'm actually using, if you just subtract these two, I'm actually using just over 100 gigabytes of capacity. But dedupe saved me 150 gigabytes, so I'm getting 56% savings. And let me show you what data is on that volume. So I have audio, video, I have images, I have programs on there, I have PDFs, and of course I have VHD files. And just to show you it's real, let me mount a VHD and copy some stuff within it, just to show you what happens. Oops. So let's copy some images into this VHD from the same dedupe volume. So we have our mounted VHD. Copy some images within it, dismount the VHD, go back to that VHD file, and you'll see that it's only using the space to store those images. Now, dedupe will come around later and eventually deduplicate the files, but you see that this runs perfectly fine on a live volume and will store your data securely. If we wait a little bit, you'll see this actually return to 4K, because this is actually the space required for the reparse point to locate your actual data. Deploying dedupe on your data stores helps you get the most out of your capacity investment. So features and capabilities are great, but what about management? Let's talk about how this release helps to minimize your operational cost. With this release, we're taking a fresh approach to deliver a cohesive and integrated management experience, from using WMI-based class structures for managing heterogeneous storage to integrated support for SMIS and SMP arrays. So you can manage different types of storage arrays all from Windows, all from within the box. And integration with the next version of SCVMM allow for easy management of your virtualized deployments. We've made broad investments in PowerShell in this release, which help enable remote administration and scriptability. So you can very easily manage a whole data center, all from PowerShell or all from the server manager, and all using the same set of APIs. Now, the manifestation of this is that we have a single storage management interface with which SMP arrays, SMIS arrays, and storage spaces talks to, all one interface. And by having a single interface, when you issue a simple command such as get virtual disk, the interface talks to all the available providers in the system to return the appropriate set of data. So in this case, we have virtual disks exposed by storage spaces. We have virtual disks exposed by an EMC provider, and virtual disks exposed by a Hitachi provider, all returned from a single command. And this is going to make your scripting a lot easier. So let me show you how you can manage two different storage arrays, all from very similar scripts in this demo. So here I have one script, and here I have another machine. And here I have another script. The scripts are very, very similar. The only big difference in this script is just the pool name, and also the subsystem name, and also the name of the virtual disk. So I'm going to go ahead and run these two very similar scripts on two different storage arrays to prepare them for use. So it's looking at the pool, preparing it for the demo, creating the virtual disk. This guy's almost done. Creating the masking set, because this is an iSCSI. Guessing the other guy's done. Yeah, the other guy's done. And this guy's already available for access through the eDrive. So I have to wait for this guy to finish. Oops. You know, I always press select when I'm in a demo, and it always stops things. It's always very funny. So this guy's practically done, just waiting for the volume to format. Drive letter, and now this is accessible. So two different storage arrays with very similar script. Most of the basics are there. Get storage pool, new virtual disk, new masking set, connect to iSCSI target, create the partition, format the volume, add the drive letter, and yeah, finished. And it's pretty much the same thing here. Storage pool, virtual disk, masking set, iSCSI target, format the disk, create the partition, add the drive letter. Similar scripts, two different storage, same result. So this is how we integrate storage management experience in Windows. So reducing complexity by providing an integrated and intuitive storage management experience makes your operational staff, which probably have to manage a wide range of different storage products, more efficient. Thus, this reduces your operational cost. Our customers asked us for a file system that focused on scalability, availability, and data integrity. Now, we have delivered this in the form of the Resilient File System, or REFS for short, which is available only with Windows Server 2012. So storage continues to grow at an unbounded pace, where enough data is being deployed today in your data centers where corruption is no longer the exception, but is commonplace. So we need to acknowledge that and deal with it accordingly. So we've built REFS from the ground up to guarantee the integrity of data through resiliency to corruption, regardless of software or hardware failures. But more than that, it's scale at a different design point, supporting billions of files. It's availability at a different design point. There's no more check disk. There really is no more check disk. And it's, of course, data integrity, which protects and auto-corrects your data against any corruption in the system. With REFS, we checksum the metadata when it is written so that we can detect changes to how it was represented on the disk when you go to read it again. Typically, in many storage systems, when you go write data and you go read data, the data that you return could be different. Most systems today just check if the data could be successfully read. We take it a step further to make sure your data was actually the data you initially wrote through these checksum mechanisms. And when you deploy REFS in conjunction with storage spaces, we go a step further. Remember when I said storage spaces has mirroring, where it can provide multiple data copies? REFS takes advantage of that mirroring and can look at each data copy to ensure that each data copy is consistent with what it was initially written as. And spaces can autocorrect any inconsistencies. Optionally, user data can be protected and autocorrected. So metadata is always protected, so your file system is always consistent, but user data can be protected and autocorrected for a small cost. And to protect against latent corruptions, that is, corruptions that go unnoticed until your data is read. So for instance, you write some data, you wait a month later, hey, your data is different. These are latent corruptions. So to protect against those, we have a scrubber that runs in the background, fully integrated with Windows, and which continually protects the integrity of your data. So it goes along, it reads each copy, and makes sure each copy is consistent. If the copy is not consistent, it'll autocorrect it. And unlike NTFS, which has the potential of volume of unavailability, we basically fix metadata inconsistencies on the fly. So your volume does not go down. So in the future, we're talking petabyte-sized volumes. And perhaps some people even deploy those today. Petabyte-sized volumes with billions of files. And we've designed for this with REFS by using efficient and scalable metadata structures so that lookup times writes and many file system operations are significantly more efficient than that which was possible with NTFS. And while REFS delivers innovative and powerful capabilities for the appropriate set of workloads right now, we're designing it in such a way that it can efficiently evolve to support new storage devices, access patterns, or other capabilities in the future as these capabilities get important to Windows and our users. So a typical REFS deployment looks sort of like this. In this deployment, we're using file server, and we're all using cost-efficient commodity hardware. With this deployment, you have protection, resiliency, against media failure with spaces. So the spaces component here protects your disks against failure. REFS provides data integrity, so auto-corrects any inconsistencies that can crop up. And failover clustering with a highly available file server protects against node failure. So in the presence of a failure of any one of these three components, including your nodes, your users can continue to access your data regardless. Of course, with any new platform, we expect you to be pragmatic about the deployment. So in this release, we have focused on prioritizing three things that we feel will benefit the vast majority of our customers, and that is scale, integrity, and availability. But there are certain features certain NTFS features that have not been implemented. But there are certain NTFS features which have not been implemented in REFS. And some of it, as a matter of intention, some of it are intentional. For instance, short names. REFS does not support short names. And some of it as a matter of scheduling. But, of course, for those set of customers which simply need the capabilities of REFS, there is no other choice. And we encourage you to evaluate REFS to see if it fits your requirements. Now, the vast majority of Win32 APIs are supported by REFS. So REFS is basically, we took NTFS, we cut out the underlying on-disk structures, on-disk store, we cut out everything that manages on-disk, and we reserve the same set of API access, and we put it in a new min store underneath. So it's very similar, the top-level API, but the bottom layer is completely different. So with this pragmatism in mind, REFS provides capabilities that many of our customers need for their business. They need scale, they need availability, and they need guaranteed data integrity. So when used with the appropriate set of scenarios, you can depend on the integrated storage stack comprising of REFS and storage spaces, and you'll see how you can deploy a cost-efficient storage platform for Server 2012. So you've seen throughout this talk how Server 2012 introduces a wide arsenal of benefits and capabilities for your storage needs, from either getting the most out of your storage investments to enabling a new cost-efficient storage platform, to rethinking availability, to simplifying storage management, and to introducing a new level of scale with REFS. This is the power of the storage platform this release. And we look forward to your feedback as you evaluate Server 2012. And thank you for your time this afternoon. So there are a number of other talks I'd highly recommend. If you want to know more about REFS and storage spaces, I would encourage all of you to attend the top talk by my colleague, Darren Moss. And it's just at 5 p.m. today on the other side. I highly encourage you to go to that talk if you want to learn more. And of course, there's a number of other talks. There are two partners that we have been working with. One of the two partners that we've been working with, and they both have booths here in the Partner Pavilion. The first of which is Raid Incorporated, booth number 23. Just look for the big rack. And of course, Data on Storage, booth number 34, and with a similar big rack. They both have hardware that supports storage spaces, and we encourage you to go visit them. We also have a number of handouts at the front that describe how easy it is to set up storage space, be it clustered or be it simple. So we'd encourage you to grab one of these handouts. You know, just read it through. Just look how the steps are. And I'll be at the Partner Pavilion or the storage booth if you have any more questions. We have a number of papers and blog entries that describe many of our new features. And of course, as we add new collateral, we'll definitely provide links up there. Yeah, well, that concludes my talk. And I'd like to open the floor to question and answers. So just walk through the slides, last few slides. All right. Are there any questions? My colleague Darren and I will be more than happy to answer them. Yes?
Hotspur spaces support Hotspurs?
Absolutely.
Can the Hotspurs be global to all pools, or are they dedicated to the pool, the secret pool?
A Hotspur is dedicated to a pool. So if you have a pool, you need to designate one or more, or you can designate one or more of your physical distance Hotspurs.
Would there be a way, can you tell me a way to simulate a drive failure so that the Hotspur would kick in?
You can pull a drive, that will simulate a drive failure.
I tried that, and the drive just went into a detached or offline, or it went into a, it didn't go, it, the disk still showed, was still enumerated, but didn't show as failed.
Yeah, do you have any ideas?
Yes. I'm Darren Moss, partner to Matthew here, or Brian, excuse me, Brian Matthew. I'm dealing with the issue described that is an issue that existed with the beta build. If you try the pre-release build, you will find that now when you have Hotspur in your pool.
He was saying that's an issue that was with the beta build. If you try the new RC build, then that issue should be resolved. So we would encourage you to try the RC build. The question was, when you tried to pull a Hotspur, and the Hotspur didn't automatically take over, and that was just a bug in the in the beta build. Are there any more questions?
Can you hear me? Okay. In a
yes.
Previous class earlier today, we were talking about dedupe as well. They were talking about when you go to read a file, it tries to rehydrate depending on the application. Now, if we deploy this in a global enterprise level SIS share or SMB share out there for the organization, what is the performance impacts if we do dedupe on the entire volume and there's a lot of files being rehydrated and thrown away and all over the place and we have thousands of users connected in?
So you have files being deleted and new files coming in?
No, I'm just saying we have files being accessed all the time, and from the previous class they were talking about every time you access it, like say Word or Excel or any of those type of applications, it tries to rehydrate the actual file before it gives it to the end user. So you have thousands of people accessing stuff on concurrently.
Yeah.
Is that going to bury the system?
Actually, with dedupe, it actually should be even better, because what happens is a lot of the deduplicated blocks get cached. So you don't have to. So many of those blocks, you don't have to go back down to the storage. So instead, it looks at the blocks in memory to grab most of the data. So if you have users accessing a lot of files, and a lot of the files are similar, then the amount of I/O time will be actually decreased. The amount of time that you go down to the disk will be decreased.
And is there any performance performance that actually shows the whole dedupe and what's being rehydrated and all that stuff, so we can trend that?
I don't know about that. If you come, let me give you my card, and I can find out more information on that afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I have two questions. One, are there any licensing limitations around any of these features? And the other one is DFSR supported on dedupe?
I'm not sure about DFSR, but for licensing, storage spaces is supported across client and server. I don't believe there's any SKU differentials, Darren, for storage spaces.
No,
it's available on all server SKUs and most client SKUs. So storage space is available on all server SKUs and most client SKUs. I do not believe it's available on WinRT.
It's not available on ARM-based devices.
Yeah, it's not available on ARM-based devices, but it's available across most of the client SKUs, all server SKUs, the same set of features, same PowerShell, and actually the client has a different GUI management, and that's through the control panel, while the server has a GUI management through the server manager.
What about for dedupe?
Dedupe is supported only in Windows Server. And I believe it's available in all versions of server. REFS is only available in server, but it's not available in the client.
But it's available in all server SKUs. It's not going to be, certain things aren't going to be, like, my concern is, are some of these things going to be limited to like enterprise server and
enterprise, you know, standard and all that stuff? Yeah. No, it's RFS is available in all SKUs of server.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question about ODX. It seems to be a radically different copy mechanism. Are there any downsides or limitations to ODX?
The only limitation is that your storage array needs to actually support the commands. So many existing storage arrays may need a firmware update to support that, but I would recommend talking to your vendors about that. As for downsides, I mean, if you're bulk copying data without the need to process that data by the machine that's copying the data, in other words, you're moving data over here and here, but don't have to process it in between, then ODX is great for you. Yeah, and we try to preserve the existing philosophy of read and write. So instead of read, we do offload read. Instead of write, we do offload write. But that's all integrated in copy, so you don't really need to do anything. You just fire up your application, and if it uses a copy engine, it should just work with ODX.
If you're copying data from one storage device to another through a Windows client, will ODX kick in there, or do you then have to go through the Windows client?
So my laptop is running a client build of Windows. I just had two SMB shares, and I copied data between them, and ODX just worked.
But was that on the same storage array, or was that between two different storage?
So in this specific example, it was on the same storage array. Many storage arrays actually have the ability to connect together and form their own group, so to speak. So as long as the array partner supports that, then we do support that. ODX is designed to be flexible enough such that the token is a very abstract concept. So as long as the array can recognize this token, it can perform, and it has sufficient knowledge in the token to perform data transfer, it can do so. So I'd recommend talking to your storage partner about what sort of scenarios they support and how you can configure for ODX to work between two different storage arrays. And many of our partners are here on the floor, so you can probably talk to them.
I'll just say on the same token to that, I know you're kind of going into they have to work together, but is there a possibility if they have 10 gig out on each side, they talk to each other versus, I don't know, going through the client of 1 gig or oversaturated client network connections?
Sorry, can you say that one more time?
I was trying to go down the same path as the gentleman before me, talking about the going between different arrays instead of potentially doing, I guess, maybe ODX, but at least have the arrays talk to each other over their 10 gig Ethernet versus, I don't know, something else.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And by just having the arrays talk to each other on 10 gig, I'm sure you save a lot of money by not having your servers have to talk 10 gig just to move data around. Any more questions? If you guys have more questions, Darren and I are usually at the storage booth. And if not, then we have many other people there as well. Okay. Oh, yes, sir.
ODX works also through DFS shares. If you copy it to DFS, not directly to the share.
I'm actually not an expert on DFS, but let me give you my card, and I will find that information out for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Has there been, with REFS being so new, has there been any testing and comparison with REFS with other file systems like RiserFS or EXT4?
We have not done those comparisons. We've just been focusing on making REFS scale, provide data integrity, and provide availability. And, of course, doing lots of stress testing within REFS itself.
Another probably dumb ODX question. If rather than using a big storage array, I simply have a pair of Server 2012 boxes up and running, and I'm copying data between the two boxes, I've got them both configured as storage devices, will that use ODX? Is that sufficient to do an ODX transfer, or do you need a storage array with special hardware?
So ODX requires a storage array with sufficient intelligence to be able to generate and manage the token from the offload read, and also to be able to receive the token. And there are also some SCSI commands, which we have worked closely with the industry to develop, that are used with ODX. So no, just having two Windows servers will not be able to use ODX. You're going to need some sort of array backend to support it. It's a good question, though.
On that same note, I was a little confused in the beginning. I saw 3PAR and EMC and NetApp, and we're a small shop, so those are typically above our price range. And then you talked about having commodity hardware. What's the real difference between RAID Inc., for example, and some of those more large providers?
So, well, of course, beyond the price difference, a lot of those providers have, a lot of those array vendors, they have a lot of, for instance, they can do hardware snapshots. That's one big thing. They have a different management interface. They can, they give you a big rack of hardware, and it's. Sorry. Yeah, and of course you can ask RAID Inc. What sort of value that they provide in their platforms compared to the big guys, but I mean the big guys, they usually are able to handle some more intelligent software capability within themselves. Like, for instance, some of them provide automatic tiering. But I mean, if for most of our customers, they're just looking for a low-cost storage platform. They just want something that's a lot cheaper than they traditionally pay. I mean, your budgets are decreasing, and but you still got to store data, right? So, yeah. Yes, sir.
REFS will work with any storage, correct?
REFS will work with any storage and will work best with storage spaces.
Why is that?
Sorry?
Why will it work better with storage spaces?
Because, as I mentioned before, REFS has the capability to checksum your data. With storage spaces, it provides multiple copies, and storage spaces has APIs to be able to bubble that up to applications. So REFS can go check the multiple copies of the data provided by storage spaces and ensure that all of them are consistent and be able to autocorrect any inconsistent ones. So REFS just works better with spaces. But of course, there's still scale, availability, and of course, we still ensure that the data that you read is still the same as when it was written. Any more questions? All right, well, you've been a great audience. Oh, one more.
Sorry, just last one on ODX. Can this, is there an API to initiate ODX transfer?
Yep. The most basic API, copy file EX, copy file 2. But of course, we provide deeper set of APIs, file system controls, to be able to utilize offloaded data transfers. But we'd recommend most customers just use the copy engine. And for most existing applications, it should just work.
Yeah. For backup use case, I'm wondering if there is going to be like something that can help backup applications read ODX volume and do the transfer.
Copy file. Just use copy file, and it'll just work.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Everyone likes ODX. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. Being a great audience. I hope you have the rest a great day. And go to Darren's talk. He'd love to talk to you about storage spaces and REFS. Thank you so much.